Well, today we're going to continue our series that we started last week. This is the 40th year of the church. And I started out talking last week about the fact that, actually Nancy brought it up, I believe, in her first statements, that there was a unique call that came to me. And so this next slide, I'm going to go over it a little bit, and I think it's just it's amazing to me that here we are in my twilight years, semi-retired, and God is bringing back in a most forceful way the original calling that He put upon me in an audible voice back in November of 1980. He said, "I want you to start a church in this area, for I have no one who will teach my uncompromised word to prepare my people for my imminent return." And that word imminent means impending, soon to happen. And that was in November of 1980. So here we are now, 40 years later, and Jesus still hasn't come. And at that time, back in 1980, you know, and I've taught throughout the 40 years that, you know something, Jesus could come tomorrow. He might not come for another 200 years. So you live your life as though He's never coming, and you live your life as though He's going to be here in the next 10 minutes. That's how you live your life. You plan for the future, and you realize that that future may never come because Jesus could come any moment. But the great task that I had was to prepare God's people for His return, His second coming. And so I spent the last 40 years trying to understand and stay true to that calling. The cross that I've had to bear, unfortunately, as I say there in that statement there, it has alienated me from a lot of people, family, friends, who believe that my ministry and even the things you're going to hear today are more agitating and divisive than they are calming and uniting. And having that pushback on this particular calling that God has given to me has been the cross I've had to bear, not myself, but Nancy and my whole family. And it's just been our great sorrow and our great stress over the last 40 years that we've had to present God's truth in a way that is often offensive and goes against the mainstream, the mainstream message of Christianity that we've been getting in our culture for the last 40 years. So today and next Sunday I'm going to be talking about what you need to know and do to be prepared for Jesus Christ's imminent return. Again, this is the verse that I used last week, because some of the things we're going to be talking about, and even as Jen read John 16:33 in her preliminary words, I summed up this message with that exact same verse, and she didn't know that. But the fact of the matter is that when you know the truth, you smile at the future. Let's read together. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles, literally laughs, at the future. And so as we go through this message, if you feel like anxiety and terror gripping your heart, you need to understand that God brings a peace that surpasses comprehension, and He wants to bring you to a place you actually look at this and you're laughing and you're smiling and you have great courage. King James in John 16 says, "Be of good cheer," because we know that all these things are preliminary to Jesus Christ's return. And secondly, even though tribulation and the storms all around us, God has promised to keep us in this place of perfect peace, prosperity, and joy because we're in Him and we're not in and of the world. Okay, here we go. In 1978, Jesus Christ said to me, that's not right. In 1978, I was in seminary. We moved from Bethlehem to Pasadena because I wanted to go to a seminary that was teaching people how to reach people for Jesus Christ. And in my preaching class, the instructor said, "Now to truly preach God's word to God's people, you must study the Bible and read the newspaper at the same time. In other words, to keep it current and applicable. Here we are in 2021, and I would say that throughout my life, I have tried to do that, even though newspapers have gone defunct, but I've tried to watch the news, I've tried to see what's going on because of the calling to prepare God's people for his imminent return. And so as the years have gone by, I've realized, you know, the fact of the matter is newspapers have come to, has almost become defunct. I mean, Grammy still gets the Times News, and some people read it online. That's great. But, you know, the media has become so biased in their agendas, and it makes them untrustworthy, and they become the major influencer of Satan's worldwide deception, which we're going to be talking about as we go through this. And, I usually watch Fox Business News, so I'm tracking these two trends. The world prosperity and peace, Paul said, is going to skyrocket up in the last days. And biblical morality and respect for Jesus Christ and his followers is going to follow the exact same track in the opposite, downhill. We'll be talking about those two trends next week. Today we're only going to be talking about the first three of the 6 points that I put on the slide. And there, as I was preparing this message, I took a picture of this particular, this is my TV, this is my house, and I'm sitting in my recliner where I spent the last 8 weeks recovering from the spinal fusion, and I took the picture because this is what I mean when I say, you know, watching the news and reading the Bible, and you see these things happening. The bias is unbelievable. Now, to understand this message, I really encourage you to go back to our website, or if you're on Facebook, if you're watching this, and watch the message I did on October 4th, saying, you know, titled, How Did We Get Here? Right? That was a particularly, let's go on. So the 6 points we're going to cover in the next 2 weeks, this is the last slide that I had last week. I'm not going to go over these six today, but this is what we're going to be covering today and next week. Now, Jamal Russ brought up on a Facebook, actually it was an email for a guy's discussion, Men of Valor, I believe the group is called, that they wanted to discuss this message in their next Zoom meeting, and he brought up the word eschatology, and eschatology is that part of theology that's concerned with the final events of history and the ultimate destiny of humanity. Now, I have listed there the three major views of evangelical Christianity. If you listen to the October 4th message, I talked a lot about major denominations who do not believe in the second return of Jesus Christ. And major denominations, their eschatology is that the end of time will be democratic socialism on the earth, not with Jesus Christ, but because that is the ultimate good that can come of human society. But anyway, and evangelical Christians, they talk, there's three major views: pre-tribulation rapture, that is the catching up of all believers to Jesus Christ when he appears in the sky. Then there's the mid-tribulation rapture, and then there's the post-tribulation rapture, that is after. And so they'd make the distinction between a great tribulation and tribulation. The great tribulation is often defined as what we read about in the book of Revelation, the catastrophic events happening geologically, astronomically, and pandemically. And so there are many Christians who believe that born-again Christians will not experience that, but they'll be caught up to Jesus before those things happen, and they will not have to go through those things. Now, you might say, well, Rick, what do you believe? Well, I believe that there are scriptures that would support all three of those views. And so, like I started out saying, I believe that we should live our life as though he's never coming and that he's going to come back in the next 10 minutes. The first century Christians, I think without a doubt, believed that they were living in the Great Tribulation. Excuse me a minute. Why do I say that? Well, when you read the book of Revelation, you'll see how terrible things were. The first century Christians had their had their homes confiscated by the Roman government. They were, their whole families were dragged into the Colosseum where they were ripped apart by dogs and wild animals. They there was a reward on their heads for the government to report them. So, I mean, how bad can things get? I would say that if you were living in those in those kind of conditions right now, I think you'd say, this is the Great Tribulation. There's 100,000 Christians. Again, that's a rounded-off number. But by groups that follow these things, there's over 100,000 Christians around the world every year that are ultimately, even though persecuted, they are ultimately martyred because they refuse to reject Jesus Christ and convert, usually, I would say 99% of the time, to Muslim, the Islam faith. And so those people living in those situations absolutely feel like they are living in the Great Tribulation. Many of them can't get jobs because they're Christians, ostracized from their families because they're Christians. I'm going to be saying, you know, as we go through this, I'm going to be saying that in the United States, we have lived in a very unique bubble of protection because of our founding fathers. And that bubble is I don't know if you want to say being popped or shrinking, but the unique protection that we have had as Christians in the United States is dwindling. Did I go back the wrong way? There we go. All right. So what do you need to know and do right now to be prepared for Jesus Christ's imminent return? Right now, here's what you need to know. What God is doing right now, what he's doing in his world, what he's been doing in the last 40 years that I have been pastor of this church, is that he is separating his faithful remnant from the rest. In Romans chapter 11, verse 5, the Apostle Paul wrote, "In the same way, then, there has also come to be at the present time a remnant according to God's gracious choice." So Paul felt, you know, when he was actually in the middle of his ministry right here in Romans, he felt that God was already putting together his remnant. How many of you sow? I know Nancy does. When you put together a dress, what do you have left over? Some remnants, right? Little pieces. If you're a carpenter and you build something, what do you have left over? Remnants, small pieces. And so God's remnant. And so Paul understood that from the moment that Paul began his ministry, God was about his remnant, finding his remnant, the faithful ones who would stay true. Now, how is God separating the faithful remnant from the rest? What I have experienced in the last 40 years and what I've been and am experiencing even at an accelerated pace right now is that God is calling out people with soft hearts while those who are not open to him are hardening their heart toward Jesus Christ and toward his values. And so what we're seeing is that people from these major denominations that have not been teaching the truth, in their heart they're soft. And so next, you know, we have, you know, in regular times, we'll have 10, 15, 20 visitors on a Sunday morning, and they have had church background, they've been perhaps confirmed, but they come because they realize that they're not being taught the truth. They have a soft heart. They've never been taught you can accept Jesus Christ into your heart and be born again. They've always been taught, follow the rules, follow the traditions. Many of them became offended at the hypocrisy, at the ridiculousness of the traditions, but yet they have a soft heart toward God. God is calling them out. He's separating. Jesus said, the chaff from the wheat. That's what he's doing before he returns. He's separating. Now, how he's separating the wheat from the chaff, his true followers. It's okay if I put that there, Lloyd. All right. For me, and we're going to be going through a lot of scriptures here, but for me, the main verse in Revelation that explains everything, and which those with a hard heart absolutely refuse to acknowledge and accept, that there is an enemy. Jesus talks a lot about his enemy, about Satan, the deceiver, the liar, the father of all lies. But in Revelation 12, what we're going to read here happened when Jesus Christ died on the cross, defeated death, and rose again and ascended to heaven. The deceiver, Satan, Lucifer, who before had access to heaven to accuse all believers of their sin, was cast down from heaven. He was cast down to the earth. Now let's read it together. And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. Wait, who does what? Who deceives the whole world. That's a biggie. Anybody who can deceive the whole world has got to be the master of lies. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. All right. Now, what does the Apostle Paul say in 2 Thessalonians 3? No one is to deceive you in any way. Now, wait a minute. Satan was thrown down to deceive us. Paul says, he's talking about now Jesus' return. Why does he say that? Because there were people who were saying, he's never coming back. Also were people saying, well, it's already happened. You know, but what they were saying was the second return of Jesus Christ that he promised is not going to happen. Paul says, let no one deceive you. For it, that is Jesus' return, will not come unless the apostasy comes first and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction. Now again, go back to the October 4th message. I talked more about the man of lawlessness, the Antichrist, the man of destruction. But we're talking today about the apostasy because that is the separation of the true believers in Jesus Christ and those who are the fake believers in Jesus Christ. And then back in Jeremiah 8:5, and this is, again, a prophecy. Why has this people, Jerusalem, turned away in continual apostasy? They hold on to deceit. They refuse to return. My grandfather used to say, why is it that people want to climb up backwards on a tree to believe a lie, and they won't stand on the truth? They won't stand on the ground and believe a truth. And people just want to hold on to deceit. They want to believe the lie. And so what you need to know to prepare for Jesus Christ's imminent return, there will be and is right now tremendous pressure from all sides for you to abandon your faith in Jesus Christ using skillfully crafted deceit. Every year that goes by, Satan's skill at crafting deceit and lies increases. And he's had quite a few thousand years already to practice and hone that craft. Now this is the parable of the wheat and the tares. Matthew 13 and Matthew 24 and 25. I spent 2 years teaching the book of Matthew back in the 80s, and I realized that the book of Matthew, particularly 13 and 24 and 25, really is the framework, the gridwork by which you have to understand and interpret the book of Revelation. Jesus' view of eschatology is of the end times. He very clearly says it in these chapters. And so here, I've always made the decision, I'm going to see what Jesus said first. Everything else in the Bible is going to be interpreted through that and has to fit into that. I'm not going to take somebody else's, whether it be, you know, John in the Revelation. I'm not going to take that and take that apart and make that something different than what Jesus said. No, what Jesus said is the best understanding. So anyway, Jesus presented another parable to them saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and left. And when the wheat sprouted and produced grain, the weeds also became evident. And the slaves of the landowner came and said to him, sir, didn't you sow good seed in your field? How then does it have weeds? And he said to them, an enemy has done this. Can you imagine if you're a farmer that you planted good seed and then during the night somebody came and with another tractor came in and planted weed seed? That would probably tick you off a little bit, right? Well, that's exactly what Satan has done with Jesus. Do you want us then to go and gather them up? In other words, try to pull the weeds out. But he said, no, while you are gathering up the weeds, you would uproot the wheat with them. Allow both to grow together until the harvest, and at that time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather up the weeds and bind them in the bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. He left the crowds, went into the house. His disciples came to him and said, please explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field. And he said, the one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man, and the field is the world. And as for the good seed, these are the sons of the kingdom, and the weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. Now, I just read to you from Revelation 12 what the devil's role is. He was cast down from heaven, and his job is to deceive the whole world. And the so that's him planting these seeds. And the harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. So this is no longer a parable now. He's actually literally explaining what he meant in each of those things that he talked about. So just as the weeds are gathered up and burned with fire, so shall it be at the end of the age. The end of the age, that's another word for eschatology. What's going to happen at the end of the age? The age that we're living in right now. There have been many ages on the earth. We're in a current age right now. And here's a little picture of the tares growing there and the wheat growing there also. So the thing you remember is that when the field is young and immature, the weeds and the wheat look pretty similar. I mean, you can't even really tell it. It's only as the field matures, okay, as Christ's return becomes more and more, closer and closer, that these tares become evident and the wheat is obviously different. What I'm telling you is that we are living in the day when you can see the tares and you can see the wheat. There's a separation that's happening. So just before the harvest, it's apparent which is which, and that's where we are now. The separation is making the difference apparent. Last week, I talked to you about Matthew 13 in the parable of the four soils, and how important that is, again, to my understanding of what God is doing in the world. I'm not going to go all over that. But those are the verses that precede the verses about the wheat and the tares. The whole chapter of chapter 13 is Jesus talking about, before he returns, what's it going to look like? What's going to be happening, right? 1/4 of the people aren't even going to, they just reject Christ. They think it's ridiculous. They're atheists. Another, you know, then I have the 325% left, but those 75% actually become, now we have, I don't know if I can move over here, but here we have 25%, so that's 75% of the entire population. But of those who claim to be Christians, how many are fake Christians? 2/3, right? You got the math? So when we give an altar call, we say, who wants to receive Jesus? I know that of every 3 people who accept him and pray, how many are going to fall away? 2. It's simple math. You know, it's a hard thing when you're in the ministry because you know, you have people, yes, I'm going to follow Christ, yes, I believe in him, but next thing you know, they're nowhere to be found. Why? Well, Jesus said. And so these verses have caused me to continue, because ultimately I understand that there's going to be 1/3 of those who say they believe. And remember, we're talking about Paul saying, before Christ returns, the great apostasy has to happen. Apostasy means leaving the faith. It's a picture of a boat that was tied to the dock, that became untied, and drifted away. That's what that's the Greek word for apostasy. Now, let me just address a little bit here about the latter rain revival theology versus last days apostasy. I know that right now, I mean, in fact, for the most 40 years of my ministry, there was a strong movement of prophecy. And many people would come to me and say, Rick, you're like a prophet, you know. And I'm like, no, I'm not a prophet. They kill prophets who are wrong, and I'm wrong at least half the time, right? But anyway, there's a strong movement of prophecy right now who is prophesying that there's going to be a great revival before Jesus returns. That's called latter rain revival theology. When I first started the church, I was a great fan, and still am a great fan of Jack Hayford, and he was strong on latter rain theology. As I've studied the Bible over the last 40 years, I've changed. I mean, I've changed in what I think. Let me just say, I could be completely wrong, and I hope I am. I hope I am. But I think that what people are seeing as revival is really the separation happening as God is calling out the soft-hearted to take a stand. And we're going to see that more and more as time goes on. And so when we see people like even you know, our church has grown like crazy around the world. The churches that are growing are churches like ours who teach the Bible. But for the, you know, I'm going to say, I won't say vast majority. I will say for many, many who come are coming out of churches who were not born again, but they're soft-hearted toward God. Others are coming out of the world who had no church background, but they have a soft heart toward God and they want. So God is calling out those who are, but they are not a majority of the population. Which in a revival, that's what happens. Okay, so anyway, latter rain theology. Oh, it comes from Joel 2:23. Shout for joy, you sons of Zion. Rejoice in the Lord your God, for he has given you the early rain for your vindication, and he has brought down for you the rain, the early rain, the early and latter rain as before. Now, Bob, what do you think? Can people read these, or is it too small on their screen? That's good? All right. Okay, good. Great. Awesome. Okay, so latter rain theology says there's going to be a great revival right before Jesus Christ comes. My response to that is that we need a bigger picture of history. Okay? I lean toward the understanding that when John Wesley and George Whitefield in England preached, there was a tremendous revival. Literally all of England and most of Europe was affected by that revival. It came over to the United States of America and lasted through the 1950s, and I'll explain that a little bit. But that period of time, there was a huge push of evangelical Christianity. And so these latter rains are, you know, actually are millennia, not decades. In fact, I would say that from Peter's point of view, when he quoted Joel in his first great sermon, he saw the Old Testament as the early rain, and now that Jesus had come, would be the latter rain. If you go around the world, okay, so these rains last for millennia, thousands of years, not decades. You go around the world, you will see huge cathedrals that have been turned into museums. Or you'll see small Protestant churches or big Protestant churches who are empty, have become theaters. Historians call this the post-Christian era. So I think, you know, my understanding is that the Apostle Paul said before Christ returns, the apostasy has to happen. And it absolutely is happening. And the great apostasy, in my understanding of history, again, you know, watching the news and reading the Bible, I believe that the great apostasy began in my lifetime. I was born in 1952. After World War II, again, if you go back to October 4th message, you'll see that Karl Marx, Charles Darwin, and Friedrich Nietzsche became the main influencers of all of culture around the world, which resulted in the rejection of the gospel in Jesus Christ. That was what began the great apostasy that has caused millions of people to leave, either just drop out of church or leave main denominations and go to churches that are still preaching the Bible. Again, That's the separation. The separation is happening because of the great apostasy. And so, yeah, small revivals. I mean, I would say that the Jesus movement, which was a kind of a Christian hippie movement back in 1971. You know, there have been small revivals, localized revivals that have happened in recent history. But they have not changed the world. And so, you know, in the latter rain, these localized revivals are symptoms of the latter rain having happened, but the apostasy happening at the same time, the separation, so that as people respond or reject, either they have a soft heart or they have a hard heart, as they respond, you're going to see these blips in the downward trend, you know. But the overall trend is down. And then I have there, to get you worked up a little bit, Donald Trump's election is also an example of the separation. You know, one of the things that we see, and again, I think I said it in October 4th, I mean, I was amazed that Donald Trump got elected, you know, and I saw it as an anomaly. Again, the trend is down, not up for God. But anyway, it's a great separation. And when you see, you know, the Black Lives Matter and the Antifa revolts, and then you see the people storming the Capitol, you know, and the news media responds differently, but both of those groups are the disenfranchised. They're the poor. They're the angry. There's a separation happening. And when I say that, I mean, you don't see Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates, you know, breaking down glass windows in the storefronts or climbing, you know. People that have money don't do that stuff. The poor, the angry, they're the ones who get worked up into these mobs and do these kind of things. So why? Because of the separation. And these separations are integrated. And I'm not saying it's all black and white, but what we're seeing, you know, and I think because, you know, in I lived through the 1960s, you know. I was in third grade when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Shortly after that, Martin Luther King was assassinated. Then Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated. I can always tell when I'm preaching a good message, the devil attacks my throat. What's that? I'll just have one of these here. Okay. So what was I talking about? The separation. I know what I was talking about. I was talking about the fact that in the 60s, you know, when I graduated in 1970. Hey, Jim, if you're watching, Jim Johnson, another shout out to you. But you know, us guys that were seniors in high school in 1970, we had three choices: go to college, go to Canada, or go to Vietnam, right? and with all of these murders going on, you want to open that for me? I don't have fingernails. But anyway, you know, but the what am I saying? The disruption, you know. But back at that time, the news media, can you unwrap it for me? You're free of COVID, right? But the news media, what I want to say is that back at that time, I mean, not that I watched a lot of news when I was in high school, but, you know, the newscasters did not have an agenda and a bias. I mean, even through Watergate, I mean, they just tell you what the facts were. You know, now you watch the news and you don't know what to believe. Okay? So, again, that is because of the great deceiver who has increased his influence, and it's also because God is making this great separation between those who are true followers of Christ and the fake believers. All right. So, do you have any questions for me yet? Okay. So the final separation of those who are true believers versus fake believers, that is those who believe the deception and not taken seriously, Revelation 12:9, that takes place at the end of the age, the harvest. The final separation happens when Jesus Christ appears, and he says, you know, you burn, the weeds get separated and the wheat gets separated, and the weeds get burned first. That's interesting. Okay. During the final decades preceding Christ's return, there will be a large major movement of people from truly following Jesus Christ to those who fake follow Jesus Christ. They quote scriptures, they consider themselves to be Christians, but they do not obey his commandments or believe in his resurrection and second coming. And in the October 4th message, I said, if you're a part of a major denomination, go to your pastor and ask him, do you believe that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead bodily? And do you believe that he's going to come back again a second time and establish his kingdom with those who have believed? Okay. And press in till you get a true answer, because major denominations and seminary, the pastors, the preachers, the ministers are taught that Jesus Christ's resurrection is a myth, and the second coming of Christ is not going to happen because he was never resurrected, and that the ultimate conclusion of history is that the world becomes a democratic socialist government. That's their utopia. Okay, and this so all those, you know, coming out of that, rejecting the fact that, you know, if you go to your minister because you believe those things and he says, well, you know, I'm not really sure, okay, then you've got a choice, right? Are you going to stay with it, or are you going to leave and say, I'm going to find a fellowship that believes in Jesus, that Jesus really did rise from the dead and he really is coming back again one day? Because if you don't do that, you have been deceived and you are part of the great apostasy as you continue to go on in your religious traditions, or you just drop out and say, yeah, that religion, they're all the same. They all want my money. So you have been deceived, and you have become a victim of Satan's worldwide deception, and you become a part of what Paul said was the great apostasy that's going to happen before Jesus returns. Okay, so people fall away from Christianity by being deceived. The source of that deception is Satan. We saw that in Revelation 12:9. But the influences that he's using in the world today to deceive you is persecution. In other words, do you dare say anything about what you believe or what your values are? Let's say at work, or, you know, with your friends or with your family, right? Because you know that if you would say that, all of a sudden there would be some offense taken, and you would have to suffer the consequences, whatever that might be. Being defriended from Facebook, being blocked from Facebook, whatever. Nobody's laughing. I can't hear you laugh anyway. Are you laughing at home? Come on. I know this is serious stuff, but you got to see the humor in everything, right? As I started out saying, you know, this, my particular way that I'm approaching or fulfilling the calling has alienated so many people that I thought we're friends, we're family. It's a cross you have to bear, but you have to decide, am I willing to bear that cross on? Jen often tells her story in high school, you know, how she said, I'm not going to play that Ouija board or whatever it was. I have, you know, she had her cross, and the next thing you know, she was no longer friends with the in-group. But you were elected president of the class. God always has his final word. Persecution, peer pressure, religious and educational indoctrination, social and governmental pressure, and yes, prosperity. When you read the Old Testament, every time the Israelites got prosperous, what did they do? They left God and made idols. You know, and so next week I'm going to be talking a lot about the world prosperity and peace, and how to ride that tsunami so that you do prosper, as John 3 says, it's God's will that you prosper and be in good health, but at the same time, hold fast to the truth of who you are in Jesus Christ and his second return. But when we say that we're going to be deceived, what we're saying is that we are going to be attacked informationally from all sides. And I tell you right now, if you're watching me, you are being attacked from all sides informationally. And you are suffering from an overdose of information, infomania. Fake Christians will vehemently defend the validity of their being Christian. Today, the majority of Christian ministers, Christian denominations, and Christians do not believe in Jesus Christ's resurrection, second return, or the final judgment, in which only those who trust in Jesus Christ will be allowed into heaven. One of the things that impelled me into this back in 1979, I was just starting out in the ministry in a denomination, and I had to go before a review board, and I had to say what I believed. And so I said, well, only those who believe in Jesus Christ are going to go to heaven. And I remember the head of that committee, he turned red, his veins were popping out. How dare you say that only those who trust in Jesus Christ are going to, what about all the other religions of the world? And I said, they're all deceived. He got so angry. Well, that's another whole story, right? I didn't continue in that denomination. I was removed. Anyway, this false teaching by apostate Christian denominations is responsible for the mass apostasy that's now seen around the world. The empty churches, the churches turned into museums and theaters. This trend will only continue and foretells Christ's imminent return. These apostate denominations constitute the prostitute. That almost rhymes. Constitute the prostitute of Revelation 17:1-19:2. Again, go back to the October 4th message. Read it. It's been called agitating and divisive, which I'll wear that as a badge of honor. But in any way, go back and watch that. I talk about, the rogue government, the beast. I talk about the prostitute. That is the apostate Christianity, blah, blah, blah. All right. So what's some scriptures? Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will... who is in heaven will enter. In Matthew chapter 7, when you read through the Gospel of Matthew particularly, you'll find that, almost a majority of what Jesus said was a warning that there were going to be a whole bunch of people who claimed to be his followers and weren't. And that's what we're talking about, the apostasy, fake Christians, those who say, yeah, I'm a Christian, but they don't obey him, they don't believe in his resurrection, they don't believe in his second coming, they don't follow him, but they claim to be Christians. Jesus said, in 1 John 2, children, it's the last hour. See, this is back in the first century, it's the last hour. I'm telling you, it's imminent. One thing I do know, that today, Jesus' return is 40 years closer than it was when I started. That I do know. It's the last hour, and just as you heard that Antichrist is coming, even now, many antichrists have appeared. From this we know that it is the last hour. If there were many antichrists, that is those who deny Jesus Christ's resurrection and second return, if there were many in the first century, I can tell you right now, there's hundreds times more that, exponentially times more, today in 2021. Who's the liar but the one who denies that Jesus is the Christ? This is the Antichrist, the one who denies the Father and the Son. That is all religions. 1 John 4:3, and every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard is coming, and now it's already in the world. For many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ is coming in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the Antichrist. Watch yourselves that you do not lose what we have accomplished, but that you may receive a full reward. Can that last part there, this message is all about, what do you need to know and do to prepare for Jesus Christ's imminent return? He says, watch yourselves. Be on the alert that you do not lose what we have accomplished, that you may receive the full reward. Watch yourself, because the deceiver is artfully skilled and he's attacking from all sides. Let's talk a little about the confirmed Christians. You're 13, you go through catechetical class, you go through confirmation, you graduate church, right? I kind of went through that. You know what it did to me? It vaccinated me against Christianity. It immunized me, kind of like the vaccine they're trying, they're giving us or going to try to give us, whatever, for the flu vaccine. Hey, I'll tell you right now, if the vaccine comes out, I'm going to take it. Nancy got it, right? I'm not, and I'm not telling you that you should. But I do know one vaccination that really works, and that is graduating church through confirmation and catechetical class. Because once you graduate from that, you feel like, oh man, I don't need church anymore. I'm good to go. I'm in heaven, if it's actually a fact. The question is, were you ever really taught the truth about Jesus Christ's resurrection, his second coming, and his establishing his kingdom on earth? Because I'm telling you that the probability is very high that your denomination and your local minister does not believe in Jesus Christ's bodily resurrection and his bodily return to the earth to establish his kingdom with those who have believed in him. Oh, 5 minutes left. All right, we've got our first point covered. Cool. That's like that cartoon that somebody sent me on Facebook. Do you get tagged in that? I guess you didn't. You know, the officer's writing up the ministry. He says, "We're trying to. I'm writing you up for preaching a 45-minute sermon in a 25-minute zone." Well, I'm really preaching a 90-minute sermon in a 45-minute zone. But guilty as charged, anyway. But these three points are so interrelated. I really don't have to spend. I can spend 5 minutes on it and talk about it. That gives time for the final song, right? Okay, good. So, what do I see in the future? Satan's deception is going to continue to spread throughout the world until Christ's followers will be hated by all nations. Okay? Matthew 24:9, Jesus said, "Then they will hand you over to tribulation and will kill you. You will be hated by all nations because of my name. And at that time, many will fall away." What's that called? The apostasy. Many will fall away. Paul called it the apostasy. Jesus said, many will fall away. And they will betray one another. Talk about family feuding. Family, Jesus said, father and daughter, mother and sister, you know, that they'll be at odds because of him. He said, many will be saying, peace, peace, that I did not come to bring peace, but I came to bring a sword. Those are the verses you don't really hear. But in the last days, you're going to see more and more of this separation happening. And because lawlessness is the rejection of God's law and morality, is increased, most people's love will grow cold. How many? Most. How many? Two-thirds. Most people's love will grow cold. I would say two-thirds is a majority. Anybody know math? Okay. But the one who endures to the end, they will be saved. And the gospel of this kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. I can tell you right now, having been pretty much around the world, that gospel has been in every nation, and many nations have rejected it and made it illegal. Final point for today, the new normal Antichrist morality / secular worldview will be the polar opposite of biblical morality. Those who hold to biblical morality will be classified as haters and therefore immoral. This is what Jesus and Paul called lawlessness, the rejection of the Creator's morality. Okay, I've got some scriptures there. I'll post them so that you can see them. I'm just going to go to my next slide. The new morality, you hear me say this a lot. Abortion is state-supported health care. Homosexuality is aggressively and militantly forced onto society by the government as it was in Sodom and Gomorrah. If you don't know that story, go back and read Genesis. And Jesus talked about it also in the Gospels. I have a picture there of Charles Schumer, who now that the Senate is a Democratic majority, he will be voted. He will be the Senate Majority Leader. He has vocally expressed his animosity toward all those who in any way do not support homosexuality. This is a picture of his daughter and her wife. And he says, all those who do not support that particular marriage is a hater and is immoral, and there should be a law against it. What's this? Step that way? Okay. Okay. If you voice Judeo-Christian values, you will be considered ignorant, hateful, and breaking the law. Persecuting, and this is the new morality. This is where we're going. This is what I see in the future. If the Bible's true, persecuting Christians is state-supported because they are seen as the obstacle to a peaceful, harmonious society. If you think I'm kidding, go to the Middle East. these, you know, in fact, you could go to most countries in the world. China, Russia. Christians are actually seen as the people who are perpetrating hatred and the reason that society cannot be peaceful and harmonious. All right, this is Peter talking about Sodom and Gomorrah. What do you need to do to prepare for Jesus' imminent return? Matthew 25, Jesus talked the parable of the 10 bridesmaids, right? Five of them were ready, five of them weren't when the groom came. Okay? They had, and he said, you didn't trim your lantern, you didn't keep your lanterns lit, you didn't keep them trimmed, you ran out of oil. Your lantern is your light. Jen said, let's shine brightly for Jesus. Is your life the example? Because, you know, he's talking about when he returns. He's going to say, have you let your light shine brightly, or did you put it under a basket, or was it completely dimmed by Satan's deception? Your lantern is your life. That's how you live your life. Your wick is your mind. He said he didn't trim your wicks, right? Okay, cut back on the news, right? Cut back on where you're getting the deception from. Read your Bible, pray, and get your mind renewed to how God views things and not the way the world is saying things. And then your oil is your spirit, okay? You have to be filled with the Spirit every day to overcome the pressures that are coming toward you. And then, of course, John 16:33, these things I have spoken to you so that in me you may have peace. Remember our first verse? With strength and dignity, we smile at the future. Christians, you smile at the future. You have peace and you have courage. Even in the world, you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world. Never lose sight of the fact that when Jesus Christ comes, he's going to say, well done, good and faithful servant. Next week, I'm going to talk more about his promises to provide for us. Give us the abundant life in the midst of all this. But today, the question is, where are you now in these days of decision and separation? Where will you be in the coming days? A deceived follower of the secular herd, or an alert, shining disciple of Jesus Christ? Okay, do you want to come on up? So if you're watching today, would you please bow your head? Close your eyes and make that decision today. Pray with me, please. Lord Jesus Christ, I do believe in you. I believe you died for my sins. I believe you rose from the dead after 3 days in the tomb. And I also believe your promise that you're going to come back one day to establish your kingdom. I ask you to come into my heart. I give you my life. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for calling me out to be your shining example and follower. In your precious name I pray. Amen.